third and final hour on this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are joined now by Samuel Culper. He is the senior editor of Forward Observer. Folks, visit the website, forwardobserver.com. And I love this guy.
Yeah. I really love this guy. I'm telling you.
He's a former contract intelligence analyst who spent 3 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is the second time he's been on the show. And we're going to get into a number of topical current events.
We had an last time as Mr. Culper was on, we had an amazing response. And he wasn't on long enough. This guy knows a lot about stuff. One thing, we had one giant butt bomb. I was going to say, you know, the other word for it. One huge MOAB go off in Afghanistan today. ISIS. Was it Afghanistan? Or was it...
It was in Afghanistan. They're
downtown
it's being
Montreal.
Reported that, that the...
Or Detroit, I should say.
There were tunnels, tunnel system was Al-Qaeda's that was destroyed. Now, WikiLeaks has come out and said that these tunnels were built by the CIA to help Al-Qaeda.
Well, regardless, and then it's going to leave a mark.
There's also reports that this is not the first time that one of these bombs have been used, that it was used in Iraq under George Bush.
Right.
Which is a report I haven't confirmed myself yet. But let's see what Samuel thinks.
Sam Culper, welcome. Come on. Let's talk.
All right. Yeah, gentlemen, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be on again.
You've got the experience to get the scars and the t-shirt to prove what you've done and where you've been, so people can read your bio on either on HagmanReport.com or the show notes, or go to your website. Well, let's talk about events. Let's make the most of the time we got. We got an hour with you. Let's talk about everything from Afghanistan to what's coming up, which is taking place this Saturday and everything in between. So, fire at will.
Oh, sure. So, I'm sorry. You want me to start with events on Saturday?
No, I'll tell you what. Let's talk about current events. What happened today with Afghanistan? We'll talk about Syria as well. How everything is, you know, interposed, and then we'll work toward the domestic, shall we say, response or the domestic climate that we expect to be seeing this weekend, beginning with Saturday. So let's hit foreign affairs first, and then work our way back home.
Oh, sure.
So, Afghanistan.
Yes, sir. So we just heard that the MOAB, the mother of all bombs, the massive ordnance air blast bomb, it's like a 22,000 pound bomb, was detonated in Afghanistan. The last thing I saw, I'm not sure if it was, I've read Tunnel Complex, I've also heard a Cave Complex, but, you know, that's really pretty much what the MOAB, the bomb is designed for. You know, if we fire off a 1,000-pound Tomahawk, it's not going to collapse, an entire cave system or entire tunnel complex. And so what the MOAB actually does is it explodes the air. It essentially, you know, pushes out, the air out of this cave and quite literally collapse it. So that's exactly what the MOAB is designed to do. Now, you know, the insurgents in Afghanistan, they have their agricultural, I just forgot the word. Their underground tunnels that carry water. And so when these things dry out, they make an excellent place for them to cache IDs or weapons or any kind of equipment that they have. And so they also, because they provide concealment and cover, insurgents also take cover in there. So, I don't know if it was a cave or a tunnel complex, but either way, that's exactly what it was designed to do. And my understanding is that Islamic State fighters really got hammered today.
Yeah, as well, I've been hearing the same thing. And I also have been reading, well, my goodness, what about the women and children who were essentially vaporized today? It's my understanding where this went off. There ain't no women and children there. These are enemy-based tunnels, complexes, as you said, ISIS fighters that take to the hills and... you know, mm-hmm. embed themselves up there. So,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so irrigation. They're essentially irrigation canals. But they're underground. Many of them are underground. Yeah, you know, women and children are going to be in villages. The Moab has about a 1 mile blast radius. And so I hopped on Google Earth today and looked at the district, this area where this bomb went off. If it went off in the mountains, it's miles away from the nearest village. So very unlikely that there's any collateral damage like women and children who were killed. Extremely unlikely, almost unless they're in the tunnels. But in terms of a village, not happening.
Okay, and this was against ISIS, the ISIS strongholds, command and control. So I can't imagine John McCain and Lindsey Graham being all too happy, or Barack Obama. Just kidding, I suppose. But ISIS, we need to defeat ISIS. ISIS is the target, obviously. And ISIS is a Western creation, I believe. I think you're pretty much on par with that when I say Western creation through policies, procedures.
Well, we certainly supported them in Syria. You know, really, ISIS is a misnomer. It's, you know, there's no ISIS in Afghanistan. It's the Islamic State. You know, ISIS is, you know, or ISIL, the right. Iraq and al-Sham, or Iraq and the Levant. And so Afghanistan is the Khorasan. North Africa is the Maghreb. So it's completely out of the area that we call Iraq and al-Sham, or Iraq and the Levant. So really what we're talking about is the expansion of the Islamic State, and they've moved up into the Caucasus regions in Russia. And I think that's one trend that we're seeing quite a bit as the Islamic State are essentially retreating and losing ground in Iraq and Syria. They're going to go back home. They're going to go back to Europe. They're going to go back to Africa. They're going to go back to Central Asia. They're going to go back to Indonesia, any number of places. And so really, I think in terms of terrorism, I think we will probably not see the end of it. But yeah, we absolutely supported the, you know, those moderate rebels in Syria that we gave munitions to. We gave arms and money and training and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I absolutely do believe that those were remnants of what we call the Islamic State of Iraq, which essentially was Al-Qaeda at the time. And now they've just morphed into ISIL or ISIS.
Got it. Okay, and thank you for that correction. I think it's an important distinction. When we're talking about this, we have to be accurate in our descriptions. So thank you for that. Okay. All right. Well, let's just keep going, and let's just have a conversation of what's going on, man. What's on your radar? We see, of course, the big events of last week with Syria. Everyone's talking about that. We're not getting the truth on that. In your experience as a military guy, what did we just witness last week, Syria?
A huge mess. So, you know what? This was a tactical strike with strategic implications. And so in 2014, when Vladimir Putin made the decision to go into Syria, I really think he embarrassed Obama, because Obama shuffled his feet. He didn't have a policy. He was not very deliberate about what he wanted to happen. It's almost as if he said, oh, well, we can just ignore these tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Christians and other innocent people just being slaughtered in the area. And so Russia went in ostensibly to fight the Islamic State. Of course, you know, their mission really was twofold. Number one, make sure that the Assad regime doesn't fall, because we're funding fighters to help topple that regime. And really, that's a strategic imperative for him. He cannot have another country in the Middle East that could come under American influence. Of course, we have not done a very good job, obviously, of keeping Iraq or Afghanistan under American influence. And the second reason really was to prevent an American strike in Syria, which of course did not happen. You know, immediately the Russians came out and they explicitly said that cruise missiles didn't hit their intended targets over the past few days. And I've looked through this, and I don't think that's the case at all. I actually do believe what the Pentagon said about the strike. As far as the sarin gas, the chemical attack, that's another question entirely. Could absolutely be the case that it was a false flag attack. I think, you know, we look at the pictures, what we know about the nerve agent, sarin, doesn't really fit the story. So, I think that's definitely questionable. But in terms of the strike in Syria, I don't believe any of the reports. I call it disinformation because that's exactly what it is. It's, you know, it's put out by the Russians and put out by other, other folks who have an interest in undermining and causing doubt in the West. And that's definitely part of Vladimir Putin's goal here, is to make the West question itself and to point out democracy. You know, Medvedev, the Russian prime minister, came out on and posted on Facebook, of all places, a number of complaints about Trump, namely that he struck Syria without congressional approval. And that's kind of the hallmark of this American democracy, is that we don't take military action without congressional approval. And he also said, you know, I really wondered, in so many words, he said, I really wondered how long it would take the establishment to make Trump break all his promises. And it took 2.5 months. And so, you know, we know he campaigned against interventionism and getting entangled in foreign affairs. And yet that's exactly what he's doing.
Why, though? Why do you think he did this? I don't believe for a minute that, given a 70-year-old multi-billionaire, ostensibly, businessman, is going to be moved by photographs alone. But why do you think he struck like he did, when in fact just 2-3 years ago, he's, and in fact in the run up to even to this presidency, he said no, we're not gonna attack Syria, but he did. But he obviously, he's drawing the line of troops. But why do you think he did this then? Why?
Well, I think I look at President Trump, and I don't even want to say his name, the other guy. You know, they both came into office with these what the opposing side would call radical beliefs and radical ideas. Trump said, hey, let's put America first. And everybody went, oh, you can't possibly put America first. And he said, let's not get involved in foreign wars. And he said, no, America's built on foreign wars. And so I think once he got in there, he kind of realized, just like the previous guy did, that, you know, my worldview is probably informed by my ideology and not by reality. And I'm not saying the case that we need to be involved in all these overseas operations. You know, everyone talks about the deep state, and there certainly is a Washington establishment that pushes for war and pushes for conflict, because that's how people get very wealthy, is through government spending, specifically defense spending. But I think he's gotten in there and really allowed himself to be, I wouldn't necessarily say manipulated, but I think he's learned a lot sitting through some classified briefings. And he says, you know, my worldview has changed tremendously. You know, just like he sat down with President Xi of China last week, and he said, look, within 10 minutes of talking to this guy, I realized that China doesn't have the level of control over North Korea that I thought they did. And he said, you know, almost a quote, he said, after listening for 10 minutes, I realized that that's just not the case. And so I think he's learned a lot of these past 75, 76 days.
Should we cut him some slack? At least, okay. Let me rephrase that, because Donald Trump was elected on a platform of total change from the status quo. However, he's made some decisions that cause many of us to question his sincerity. What I'm hearing you say is, wait a minute now, you know, that he's getting informed, and he's basing his current actions on that new information. Mm-hmm. So, my question to you, do we cut him some slack?
Great question. You know, let's look at candidate Trump and President Trump. Candidate Trump surrounded himself with men like Steve Bannon, Mike Flynn, who is a radical anti-jihadist general. You know, he surrounded himself by people that said, hey, let's finally put America first. And now he's in, and now he has a son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and he has, you know, I love General Mattis as much as the next military veteran, but, you know, between Mattis and McMaster and some of the other advisors he has, you know, these are military men, and they see, they see military operations as an extension of the office, of extension of American diplomacy. And so what I really hope is the case is that they're coming out strong and kind of, you know, what the Chinese have a saying, something like kill the chicken to scare the monkey. And so I'm really kind of hoping that that's the case, I look at some of the, you know, they got Gorsuch in, and so I think that alone is probably worth a Trump presidency, and the witch from Arkansas didn't win, so I'm completely satisfied, basically, no matter what happens for the next 3+ years. Now, should we cut off some slack?
Wow, you're an easy sale. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know, you just had Chris Martinson on, and, you know, several years ago, I think 2009 or 2010, you know, I bought The Peak Prosperity, his crash course, and everything he's saying, I think we have a little reprieve from that. Had Hillary gotten elected, I think the whole thing would have just gone off the cliff. We would be in a lot worse position than we're going to be with the Trump administration. But I say that with one caveat, that the Trump administration we thought we got may not be the Trump administration that we actually get.
Interesting. And I agree. I agree with that statement.
If we can, I want to switch gears here to talk about the political climate in the country. We've seen, the never Trumpers, the not my president, the social justice warriors. And, you know, we had those riots in Berkeley, California. We have, I believe, Ann Coulter, who's going to be giving a speech in Berkeley in a few days.
Oh, boy.
What
is she bringing Milo with her?
What do you expect to see now that we've seen a little bit of cool down, or at least a perceived cool down from both sides? What do you expect to see? Will she be allowed to speak? Do you think there'll be riots? What can we expect here?
Yeah, well, when we talk about political activism, Berkeley is just about ground zero for the entire nation. So, you know, luckily, for the past since January, I've taken a considerable amount of time and looked at, kind of done these case studies on what happens when Antifa and social justice warriors and other political leftist political activists show up at a counter protest or a counter rally against conservatives or pro Trump rally goers. And so we've actually been able to learn quite a lot. It seems to me, well, I won't say. Yes, it seems to me, but without a doubt, the counter protests that have been most successful in preventing a pro Trump or conservative rally have been when these leftists show up at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, well before the rally is supposed to take place, and they sit on the steps of the court and they bang their little bongos and their little 5-gallon bucket drums. And I think in Minneapolis, they actually brought in a marching band to completely drown out any of the speakers at the rally. And so I think without a doubt, but before we get to violence, before we get to anything more extreme, I think that's probably the number one tactic that we're going to see on Saturday morning. Get there early, beat them to the punch, so to speak. It's been quite effective. We're probably going to see that again.
Okay. That makes sense. The organizations, and I kind of want to talk to you about this as well. Because I know you're focused on this. There's anti-Trump, very, very specific anti-Trump activism. Groups like, Indivisible, Move On, Refuse Fascism. Then you've got the Obama-related groups. The, Gamaliel Foundation, the Woods Fund, the, Obama himself, with American Oversight and the Organization for Action. And then you've got the Bill Ayers of the world. Then you've got pro illegal alien invasion groups. I'm getting to a point here. Then you got the pro perverse. I'll just leave it at that. Okay, so those are the groups. At the higher than that, you've got organizations, for example, Media Matters. You've got American Bridge 21st Century. You've got Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And then you've got American Oversight, which is a 501c4. It's founded by Obama officials, the lawyers and such. And SharePlus. SharePlus is the news arm of this propaganda machine. The reason I brought all this up is because we've infiltrated our certain groups, and we're getting some really interesting feedback saying that, yeah, that's the tactic that you just mentioned. get there early, drown them out. But we're also getting feedback that they want to organize, not just disrupt, but to destroy. Just to destroy. I mean, create as much pandemonium and chaos as possible. 60s, 68, 70 on steroids is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's going to be the flashpoint of this based on what you've been looking at or what you're seeing?
Yeah, you know, reading through social media and some of the leftist websites, you know, as an intelligence analyst, one thing we did in Iraq and Afghanistan is say, okay, in order to defeat an adversary, we have to understand their doctrine. We have to understand their worldview. We have to understand how they train, their end goals, their command and control, their communications. And so really I apply this kind of same concept to looking at the leftists. And if I can just briefly, I look at leftist organizations about the same way I do Islam. Okay, Islam's extremely complex. It's not one monolithic religion. But I look at Islam in circles, right? You have Muslims who are either cultural or religious Muslims. You have the Islamists who constitute most of Islam. Those are the people who say Islam first and Islam only, but we're not going to chop your head off. We're not going to bomb you. And then you have the hardcore jihadists. And so I think in terms of the leftists, right, you know, we have individuals who lean to the left. That's 100%. And then we have these leftists who say socialism or progressivism first and progressivism only. And then you have the hardcore element, I don't know, there's probably some witty term we can come up with, but the individuals who are willing to commit political violence. And so I think each of those have a flashpoint. You look at CPUSA? I think it might have been the communist, not the Revolutionary Communist Party, but some communists and socialists said, hey, look, we can't get into a violent conflict right now because we're going to lose. There's too many rednecks with guns, you know? And they didn't say that exactly, but that's what they're getting at. They said, look, we need to achieve terminal velocity here. You know, we need to achieve a mass appeal to the public. We need to achieve massive popular support before we go get into that. We look at Mao's revolution in China. That's exactly what he did. And so I think we're still probably in that phase, not quite towards the middle of the phase. In terms of a flashpoint, I think if Trump were to be reelected, I think that could be a potential flashpoint. In 2018, if the congressional elections don't go the way of the leftists, I think that's probably another escalatory point that we could see. But I think really the leftists are still trying to build momentum. I don't think we're quite there yet in terms of a mass conflict. But I do think the leftist terrorism is on the rise. It's certainly gaining appeal. You know, you just mentioned the 60s and 70s. There were hundreds, maybe thousands of bombings during that time, believe it or not. And so I think we absolutely could get to that point.
Yeah, that's what we're getting from an intelligence standpoint. And of course, their memes are Trump is not a duly elected president, obviously, because he was not elected by the majority of the population. Trump is an authoritarian billionaire with domestic and foreign conflicts of interest, including those with Vladimir Putin in Russia. He is highly emotional, fragile. He's a manic depressive. He's got a lot of mental problems. He's a white supremacist, obviously, and a threat to minorities. He's the anti-Donald Trump opposition is growing outside of the Beltway and as well as inside. But to save democracy, of course, this is their operational platform. Mutual enemies must be going to support one another with money, with influence, and of course, where that fails, compromise and bribery. So, kind of, in line with what you're saying, in the globalist agenda, what they need to do, and of course, what they have been doing is their focus on gun control and gun confiscation. Yes, confiscation, and then of course, the raising the minimum wage. healthcare for everybody, tuition, free college tuition for everybody. That's part of their platform as well. We just saw that in New York, which is really not true, but, and more and more and more. So you're right. There's a lot of stuff going on in the background with the, I don't know, would that be the old guard, I guess, or the political, arm of the communists / globalists, or is that the non-confrontational? So we're saying just settle down. We're gonna win. Just, it's gonna take a little bit more time. Where's the other side? I think you might have mentioned RevCom and such. They're saying, okay, we're gonna go kick some butt. I mean, you know.
Yeah. You know, really what we're talking about here is a political insurgency, and should that fail, then potentially a physical insurgency. And an insurgency has three parts, kind of three prongs to it. You know, it has.
Oh, man. Sorry about that.
Okay. That's okay.
We're up against the break. This is a good stopping point.
Okay.
Pick this up on the other side. Go ahead.
We're talking with Samuel Culper, forwardobserver.com. That's forwardobserver.com. He'll be with us until the end of the show. One segment after this, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Samuel after this short break. Stay with us.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trang Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Armies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Armies kit at www.changelessonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
of the Hagman Report, Samuel Culper. ReadFOMag.com. That's ReadFOMag.com. That's where to go. And on this side of the break, we're going to be talking about, you know, everyone's concerned, and this is what Mr. Culper said during the break. Everyone's concerned about what's going on 1,000 miles away, 10,000, or, you know, I shouldn't say, a few thousand miles away. You should be more concerned with the 1,000 feet away or within a mile radius of where you're at. That makes more sense. We're going to be talking about that as well, the three-part insurgency and what's going to be taking place on Saturday and what is going to spring forth from that before we get back to our guest. I just want to remind people about Awaken to the Shaken Conference, May 5th and 6th. It's free. It's a free conference. We're going to be speaking there, and I'm going to be laying out in a courtroom presentation. See right here. If you're watching on YouTube Live, it's right there. Where am I? Bang, right there. Right. And then Joe's right there. And then Pastor. Whoops, I'm going to go over there. And then here's Russ right here. See? Okay. So, seriously, folks, register. If you think you can go. And I think it's like, I don't know, a great percentage of the population is within a day's drive of Gurnee, Illinois. It's just north of Chicago. So register, because the seats are going quickly. Register for Awaken to the Shaken Conference. Just click on the link from our website. It's going to be well worth your time. Seats are limited, so it's free. And if you don't like it, we're going to give you your money back. So there. All of it, except for what you paid for to get there and lodging, if necessary or if desired. But Awaken to the Shaken, May 5th and 6th, it's going to be great. We'd love to meet you there as well. Before you get back to our guest, Greenovative, greenovative.com. Their products, check greenovative.com, greenovative.com. Check out their products. They have the Super GMAG Power Cell. They've got all sorts of rechargeable AA, AAA batteries. I mean, these are not batteries that you would buy in a store here or around you. This is a top-notch quality kit. And if you want to charge your cell phone, all you need is a little bit of salt, a little bit of water. That's greenovative.com. Very proud to offer that product. Alan Riggs, great friend of the show. And I'm going to tell you, folks, you better have alternative power. I really believe that. And even if the lights widespread stay on, this will still come in handy regardless. 321-638-4885 is the number, or greenovative.com. Let's get back to our guest. Joe, go ahead. Bring him on.
Yeah, Samuel Culper is our guest. And where do you want to start off this segment, Samuel?
Well, let's pick up where we left off talking about insurgency, specifically a political insurgency, what that looks like, and then what that could actually progress into down the road.
All right, well, let's jump right in.
Three-part students, or three-part insurgency. That's good. Good point.
Yeah, so, when we think of insurgency, we think of insurgents and war fighting and guerrillas, and so really that's kind of the first part of an insurgency, are the actual war fighters. In terms of the number, the percentage of an insurgent organization, the number is actually quite low. So what does a warfighter, what does a guerrilla need to sustain himself in the field? You know, well, he needs mobility and transportation, food, supply and logistics, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's why he has what's called the auxiliary. And the auxiliary exists to support the warfighter. You know, we look at a tooth-to-tail ratio, and so for the U.S. Army in Iraq or Afghanistan, traditionally, that's been 7 to 10 to 1. So 7 to 10 support soldiers, so, you know, finance, intelligence, operations, supply, communications, et cetera, all the things that keep an army moving, and so 7 to 10 support soldiers for every one infantry soldier. So, I don't know, you know, those numbers vary, what those actually look like, the tooth-to-tail ratio of different insurgencies, but what I want to get at is the most radical elements are elements that are actually the individuals who are willing to commit violence on behalf of politics. They're definitely in the minority, but they're surrounded by this massive support system. And so we look at Black Bloc, tactics and some of these other, you know, tactics that the writers and the media calls them agitators, but they're actually writers or political terrorists, if you will. You know, these black bloc elements use a protest for cover. And so they say, look, you know, we don't want to get off on our own. We don't want to get isolated, which is exactly the last thing that a guerrilla wants to do, is to become isolated from his support base, which in a counterinsurgency, that's exactly what we're trying to do. How do we isolate this guerrilla fighter from their support base? And so they use the protest for cover. You know, Mao famously said of guerrilla warfare, he says, look, guerrillas swim among the population like fish swim among the sea. You know, we think about a fish. He gets, I mean, he receives 100% sustenance from his environment, the water that's around him. And so, I mean, his food lives in the water. Everything he needs is there. And so really, when we look at support for a guerrilla organization or an insurgent organization, that's kind of the exact same concept we're looking at. So me as an intelligence analyst, I say, how do we first identify the fish? How do we identify the water? And then how do we flip those fish out of the water so that they're no longer receiving sustenance? The other part, the third part, so there's the guerrillas, there's the auxiliary, and then there's also the underground. And the underground are involved in propaganda and sabotage, and kind of the more political functions of this insurgency. And so we look at the mainstream media and we look at, you know, propagandizers. And they're absolutely, they are the underground in this insurgent organization. And so really those are the three parts of this political insurgency. And so I really do think that if the political insurgency fails, if they don't meet their ends, then things will escalate to a physical warfighting insurgency. Now let's look at Saturday in Berkeley, California. Of course, in February, there was a riot that prevented Milo Yiannopoulos from speaking there. And that was, I mean, that was their grand slam. They shut down Milo. And so they've successfully taken these same kinds of tactics, and they shut down Gavin McInnes, and they've, you know, attacked professors to prevent, a number of other libertarian conservative slash, you know, alt-right speakers to prevent them from speaking. And so really, Saturday, they view it, I think they're looking at this as their Casey at bat moment, because they're going to be alt-right figures there. They're going to be conservative, libertarian. Of course, everybody's a racist. If you're not a socialist progressive, you're a racist, regardless of the facts. So this is, of course, in that poem, Casey at bat, he strikes out. So, you know, that's ultimately the goal. But if they hit a grand slam, I think this is a watershed moment from them. Because here we have Gavin McInnes and Laura Southern and Ann Coulter and a number of figures who are set to speak. And if they are prevented from speaking, then I think that's going to put a lot of wind in their sails.
You know, okay, if they are prevented from speaking, that phrase right there, what would prevent them from speaking would be the lack of, in my view anyway, the lack of intervention by the police. Is that a fair statement?
Certainly. We're looking at something called the human terrain. Right. You know, are those police officers, are they more likely to be ideologically left-leaning or ideologically right-leaning? And we look at the surrounding demographic in Berkeley, and of course, it's not all 100% leftist, but it's mainly leftist. And maybe those police officers don't actually live in Berkeley, but that part of California is obviously extremely liberal. And so what you have is more than likely ideologically committed police officers who have looked the other way. You know, the police are still looking. This happened in February. Police are still looking for some of those rioters. And so they shuffled their feet and they're, you know, slow about, you know, getting out to stop these things and getting out in front of this riot. So I would not be surprised if law enforcement there is actually more sympathetic to the rioters than to the speakers.
Interesting. And I can see that. We saw that in February to some extent anyway. And it's amazing to me how a police officer, whether it's campus police or city police or state, or regardless, can stand back and watch property be destroyed, their own property be destroyed, right, as they're standing there watching. All right, so let's game this out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's say the communist numbskulls, the little Marxist minions are out there, and they get their way, and they shut the event down. What's going to be the response? Or conversely, alternatively, the event goes off, and the event goes off. But let's the first scenario. What happens?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's make a key assumption here. You know, in intelligence, we don't always have facts. We don't. It's actually more often than not that we don't have hard facts that we know as the gospel. So we make key assumptions, and we identify this as a key assumption. It could be wrong. So let's not build this entire massive structure on this one key assumption unless we just have to. So let's make a key assumption that these officers have, they retain their discretion, so they can choose who they want to arrest and who they don't want to. And as a secondary thought, let's look at these police officers. Yes, they're individuals, but they're also employees. And so if they're receiving certain instructions from their police chief, then, maybe their own personal ideology and feelings are overridden by maybe wanting to keep their job and not getting fired. So if the leftists are prevented from, honestly, I don't know what this planning phase looks like. I don't know kind of from an operation or tactical level. I don't know what the Patriots Day rally is actually doing. I don't know what law enforcement's doing. We're going to get started on that. If we battle track this on Saturday, our startup is actually going to start on Friday night looking at this stuff. So, let's make a key assumption that police don't stop the rioters, and that the leftists do show up with tear gas and a marching band and their little bongo drums that they beat everywhere, and they can disrupt or entirely prevent the Patriots Day rally from going on. Obviously they're going to continue to disrupt future events. I think it's actually a very, very good recruiting tool. We look at the Islamic State, and every time CNN ran, this ran some poor guy getting burned alive or these people getting just dying these gruesome deaths, these people, the disaffected youth in the Middle East, said, oh yeah, this is Islam. We can go have these harems, and we can, capture women and make them our sex slaves, and we can kill the infidel in all these gruesome ways. And it was propaganda by deed. It was this massive recruiting tool. And so I look at every time they successfully shut down a protest. I mean, you ought to see, I read a lot of the leftist websites, and it reads like a North Korean press release. They're like, oh, our glorious fighters in the struggle with solidarity. It's kind of communist 101 stuff. It would be laughable, except that it's absolutely serious.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and continue forward from here. We talked about Saturday, and we can continue that vein. But you said something as well, about the we tend to think about, or we tend to give more credence to events that happen thousands of miles away rather than just in our own backyard. So if you want to segue into that, we have about 15 minutes left of the program. So however you want to slice the rest of the remaining portion of the program, just go ahead and take it.
Sure. Well, we at Ford Observer, we really exist to keep an eye on national and strategic level reporting. I look at it this way. I'm a prepper myself. I'm extremely concerned about the future. If I wasn't concerned, then I wouldn't be running Ford Observer. I assure you, I'd be a fly fishing guide or, living somewhere else by now. But so what we do is we keep an eye kind of on the top level stuff. What I recommend my students, I teach intelligence courses. What I recommend readers to do every Friday, I produce an intelligence report with this kind of top level reporting, tracking the trends, doing trend analysis and so forth. So we're doing the top level stuff. What I recommend, finally, I will tell you, what I recommend readers and students to do is look on the local level. That's something that I can't do for you, but that's something that you're uniquely suited to once you learn how intelligence works. And so a big part of my podcasts and training classes and other things that we do go towards training individuals at a local level to team together, build a local intelligence element, and track threats. And it doesn't matter if that's, gang activity or drug activity, local corruption, anything that could pose a threat to you pre-SHTF or post, you know, post-disaster event. Let's go ahead and identify that stuff now so that we can understand more about how things work so that we can be better prepared and have much greater situational awareness after the event or during the emergency. And unfortunately, I think a lot of Americans are going to get caught with their pants down because, you know, they know the blast radius of a Moab, but they don't know how many gang members live in the projects, you know, a couple miles from where they live. And really, that's the fight. You know, there's this, you know, what is it? Think globally, act locally, or whatever they say. You know, well, that's kind of the same thing with us in intelligence. You know, if we don't secure our communities, then we're going to be living in constant fear. You know, another important, you know, part about small wars or small conflicts is we have to have a support base. And if we're not out meeting our neighbors and networking and kind of building, you know, more preppers, traditional preppers would look at that and say, oh, this is my prepper team. Well, I look at that and say, this is my intelligence team. Every neighbor, whether he's in your prepper group or not, every old lady, every, you know, young kid, they have eyes and ears, and they're constantly collecting information. As an intel guy, I say, if they live in my neighborhood and they see something suspicious, they observe suspicious behavior or gang activity or any kind of potential threat, and they're not telling me, then I'm not doing my job as an intel guy. And so really, Ford Observer, part of our mission is to create local intel guys who are ideologically, you know, conservative or constitutionalist or, you know, whatever, libertarian, whatever you may be. I think we're all basically pushing in the same direction. And so, you know, like Chris Martinson was saying, it's a matter of time before this stuff happens. How bad things are going to get is still a large question mark. But I don't want to trade one tyranny for another. You know, I don't want to say, well, you know, America as a nation went belly up and now I live in an even worse place because my local government sucks or my state government sucks and my community sucks. And it's just a matter of time before I'm going to be starved or killed for my stuff. And really, so the solution to that problem begins at a local level. You know, we can do a great many things to become more aware of our surroundings. One of the things I teach is battle tracking. As a matter of fact, on Saturday, we may be battle tracking the Berkeley riots of 2017, of April 2017. You know, in the schoolhouse, when I was going through the schoolhouse in 2004, you know, we trained to track Soviet, basically a war with the Soviets. Of course, it was 2004, it's post-Soviet, but at that time, the Russian military was still very close. They had not had the series of reforms that they've had since then. And so we're looking at a map, analyzing, okay, well, where are the Soviets going to put their, you know, their BMP-3, their mechanized infantry fighting vehicles, and where are they going to put this self-propelled artillery unit? And so really I've taken this very conventional military aspect and converted it into a more community-centric aspect, where instead of looking for military vehicles and military operations, we're looking at gangs, or we're looking at Bernie supporters or Hillary supporters. We're understanding what's called the human terrain. Really, we're kind of getting on the ground floor of our community, identifying the strengths and the weaknesses, identifying potential threats, prioritizing these threats, doing what we call a course of action. So if you do have a gang or you do have some leftist group, you know, what are they going to do in the future? What are their potential courses of action? Ultimately, intelligence reduces uncertainty. And the more we know about our area, the more certain we can become about what our community is going to look like during this event. And it doesn't matter if it's a civil war or economic collapse or an EMP from the North Koreans. If we can't project, if we don't understand what our community is going to look like in the future, then we are way behind the curve. And that all starts locally. So yeah, as much as understanding kind of these strategic events or strategic trends is important, the real fight for us is locally. I recommend 60-30-10. 60% of our time really should be focused on the local area, 30% on the what we call the operational level, which would be your county or your state, and then finally 10% would be national or strategic. We try to take, at Ford Observer, we try to take care of that 10% for you by explaining, you know, putting these events in context, explaining the implications and how these events are going to affect the future, we try to take care of that 10% so that you can basically redouble that time back locally.
All very, very good, points, especially, you know, we can't say enough about the community aspect, having, knowing your neighbors, knowing the people around you. You know, you can't put a value or a price on that because, when it's needed and when you're in times of distress, you know, that could be priceless, you know, having those connections and knowing, you know, who's supposed to be around you and who's not supposed to be around you. Which is a very big thing. If we can kind of switch gears here in the last 8 minutes, reading some of what you sent us earlier this week that you wanted to get into, point five, you're talking about the NSA and how that the NSA is endangering American national security. But you also added a point in here about the federal cyber budget. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with that? And you say that it's 90% offensive. Rather than, you know, protecting against cyber attacks, 90% of our cyber budget is actually, you know, going after and being, you know, on the offense here, hacking and whatever else that entails?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Well, you know, we all like our toys. You know, we have our favorite rifle, we have a motorcycle or a monster truck or, you know, whatever you're into. Well, NSA and the intelligence community is no different. You know, they like these, they like to go and exploit people, exploit, infrastructure, exploit, you know, cyber infrastructure in order to gain intelligence information. And we make decisions. We don't make decisions based off information. We make decisions based on intelligence. Well, NSA says, okay, well, what do we need to make intelligence? Well, we need information. Okay, well, let's just go out and get as much information as we can. I mean, let's suck up every text message, every phone call, every IP address, everything, and just put it in a database somewhere. And we may not need it today. We may not need it for 15 years, but you know what? Eventually we're going to need it and we're going to have it. Well, I look at that and say, that's quite a lot of data you have there, gentlemen. And so, as an analyst, you know, intelligence doesn't produce itself. Information needs to come across my desk so I can look at it and say, this is the proper context. This is what this means. Oh, yeah. And then last week I read this report. Okay, well, let's put this together. And 6 months ago this happened. And so, oh, wow, all of a sudden I've synthesized all this information and I start to create intelligence. This is, you know, these three events. This is the next event, or this is what the next event's going to look like, something actionable or predictive. Well, the analyst is the bottleneck in this whole process. And so, you know, Rand Paul has been a big proponent of more targeted collection and zero mass collection. And I actually agree with him. It's counterintuitive, but the bigger this haystack we have, the more we have to search in order to find the pin, or to find the needle rather. And so I say, look, let's carve off a sizable chunk of this haystack to make those needles much easier to find. As far as the cyber budget is concerned, yeah, Reuters broke a week or two ago that 90% of the federal cybersecurity budget goes towards offensive operations. Well, what that means is we're not focusing on defending our own network. Yeah, we have defense, but you know, I mean, it's like every week there's some massive intrusion or some massive data leak or some massive cyber exploitation or cyber espionage event. And so I say, and then another thing, the CIA leaks and NSA leaks previous to this actually point out that these organizations had found vulnerabilities in firewalls and other, you know,
you're
software.
About the Vault 7, WikiLeaks Vault 7.
Yeah, Vault 7. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Exactly. Yeah. And so what we know is that they found these vulnerabilities in U.S. critical infrastructure, in our cyber infrastructure, and instead of alerting Cisco or some of the other companies to say, hey, you have a vulnerability that can be used by a nation state or a criminal hacking group, patch this up, they say, oh, wait, no, that's in use in Russia right now. So, okay, let's use that. That's another point of attack for us. That just increases our attack surface for them. And so, you know, that's exactly what they're doing is they're sitting on these massive number of exploits that are quite frankly more than likely being used to attack U.S. infrastructure instead of patching these things up. And so, I absolutely do think NSA is, I mean, they get caught up in these massive budgets and trying to grow their budgets and trying to do more. And I think they're honestly, their charter should be more towards protecting the U.S. because all of a sudden we're now in this kind of brave new world where anybody with a laptop and an internet connection can launch a cyber attack now. And so, absolutely, I would scale back some of the collection, and really kind of refocus on defending the United States. You know, the next war we get into with Russia or China, North Korea, Iran, those are the big four. You know, they all have active cyber programs. And so I think the likelihood is extremely high that the next large conflict we get into, that we are going to have cyber attacks on critical infrastructure here at home. And so a war that's, you know, 5,000+ miles, 8,000 miles away, all of a sudden is going to be brought to your doorstep when your lights go out or your internet goes out or, you know, any number of things that could happen through a cyber attack. And quite frankly, that's kind of a scary prospect, because it's, you know, because of the second and third order consequences. What happens when Chicago or Dallas or New York or LA gets shut down and, you know, there's, you know, potentially, you know, the chaos, doomsday preppers have been, you know, preparing for this whole time. So the point that I'm getting at is that we're still extremely vulnerable. Our government's not doing enough. You know, we talk about the social contract, right? We give up some of our rights. We give up some of our things to government so that they take care of us. Well, I'm not saying that I'm a huge fan of the concept of the social contract, but the federal government is not upholding their end of the social contract. And so I think that's one large reason why I'm extremely uncertain and extremely concerned about the future, because we know when that happens, nothing good happens after that.
Samuel, you're taking us to the end of our broadcast. Folks, Samuel Culper is our guest. ReadFOMag.com. ReadFOMag.com is the website. And I want to thank you so much.
Great. It's great.
For coming on and definitely taking anything away from this interview. One, got to pay attention this weekend to Berkeley, California. And make sure you visit Samuel's site, and you said you'll be covering this event, and
that's correct.
Okay. And again, Ann Coulter is going to be speaking at Berkeley, the same place where Milo Yiannopoulos went to speak and the riots broke out a few months ago now. So we'll see if what happens there, if we have riots, if we have them stopping these people from being able to speak. And I think it's it'll be a good bellwether to see where, if at all, our country has moved in the last few months from where we were, which I don't think. I think the opposition to Trump has just increased, and the money that Soros pours into these groups will continue to keep them violent and on their toes. So
you certainly have added to the discussion, Mr. Culper. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Wow. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you, gentlemen, for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
All right.
We look forward to having you on again.
Thank you.
That'll do it for us tonight. Until tomorrow, stay safe, God bless, and have a great evening. We are out.